down, you know, that pretty well come into depression, and it was too much. Well, I worked in the real room. I worked up just about wherever you could pick it up. This is the kind of thing you want, like.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I joined the Army in 1939. I think it was a week after Canada got in the war. 20th of September. No, that was my birthday anyway. I joined the Army. Incidental. And we were here. Joined the Army in September. We were at Fort Osborne there. We didn't have any, I guess you probably heard this, we didn't have any barracks to go to them. We just used to go there in the daytime and go home about 4 o'clock. Mm-hmm. In December, we went to Fort Osborne Barracks. And we were there till May of 1940, when we went to Jamaica.
What type of training did you receive when you were at Fort Osborne, any?
Well, we didn't receive too much training, mostly, you know, military drill. We did have a bit of machine gun training at, on Ellis there, Mindo Armies. That's where we were till we went to Fort Osborne. We had, not the Red Gun, but Lee and Pino, machine gun training. Mm-hmm. That's practically all outside of rifle drill. That's practically all the training we had. Until we went to Jamaica, and we didn't have too much there. We took a little training on the anti-tank rifle there, and then they dropped that because Roy's anti-tank rifle. They dropped that because they figured that was too dangerous for type of anti-tank. So from there we went. We went on internment duty there, guarding German and Italian. What's the word for it? Internees, but I mean they weren't active participants, but they were, you know, under suspicion.
Yeah.
We did that practically all the time around in Jamaica. About 6 months before I left Jamaica, I went on the garrison police there, and I was on that till the time I got back to Canada in September in 1941. And then we were home about a month in 1941. I think I came home in September and left in October for Hong Kong.
Did you know where you were going when they dispatched?
Well, we didn't. I don't think we found out. Seems to me we didn't find out it was up to Vancouver that we were heading for Hong Kong then.
Mm-hmm.
If I remember right. And we went on a boat called the Alatia. We found out at the time it was quite a spicy boat. It had been a pleasure cruise between Australia and New Zealand. You know, it was not actually an army type of boat. It had just been converted the best way we could.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember I was so startled by the length and the you know, how small it was, the length and how narrow it was, you know, for a thing that had been converted. And we were accompanied by a cruiser. The other part, the ones that weren't able to go on this pleasure cruiser, were on board this warship. I don't know what you'd call it, a cruiser, I guess. And I think this is about the longest trip I ever put in my life as far as distance. You know, it seemed like it would never end, mm-hmm. although we had good weather all the way. We stopped, at 2 or 3 hours at Hawaii. We never got off the ship.
Was the boat quite crowded, or did you have?
Oh, it was crowded enough. We slept in hammocks, you know.
Mm.
And it was so hot, lots of us slept out on the deck, and everyone was pretty. We just got a mattress or whatever we had and slept on that.
And how long did it take you to reach Hong Kong, do you remember?
I don't. It's either 21 or 22 days to be reached. I think it was this 18th. Let me see. 18th of November when we got to Hong Kong in 1941.
Did you do any training while you were on?
We did very little except drill, you know.
Mm-hmm.
actually there wasn't room for anything like that, you know, anything otherwise than do lectures and so on. Very little seasick. I was going to say when we were going to Jamaica, well, this is kind of backtracking, but there's not a lot of guys who were seasick at that time, but actually I could only say I was only seasick once in all the time. That was the first night out of Halifax. I guess we were just getting used to boats. I cramped up on the train going right through, and we got right off the train and got onto the boat.
This was on the way to Jamaica?
Yeah. But going the other way, I was never seasick at all. There wasn't too many. Of course, it was, as I say, it was calm voyage. It wasn't, just like going down the Red River and
canoeing.
What was the
food like? Do you remember?
The food on board ship left quite a bit to imagination. It was most Australian boat. It was mostly mutton.
Oh, yeah.
I think most Canadians are allergic to that. I got that idea anyway. Otherwise, I mean, outside of that, I guess it was good enough there.
And once you reached Hong Kong, what sort of training did you receive there?
We didn't receive too much training there either, because we didn't have that much of training. We had training again on machine guns, you know. Whatever they call it, not Lewis.
Vickers.
Vickers. We were supposed to have training in these machine guns from these Bren gun carriers, you know. But unfortunately, there were only a couple of Bren gun carriers there. I think they belonged to English. We borrowed one or once or twice in the small time we were there before the fighting. Rifle training, drill, nothing at all.
What did you think of Hong Kong and the Chinese people?
Well, when I first saw Hong Kong, I thought that was about the homeless looking place I ever saw on the face of the world. I mean, in the surrounding country, just, you know, dirty brown hills, that's about all about the only way you could judge it. The city of Hong Kong, which is a misnomer, the side of it, it's not the city of Hong Kong at all. The island is Hong Kong, the city is Victoria.
Oh.
But it's called that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a squalid, dirty place. If I remember right, the population there was some over a million. And I think the island is only about 9 miles long and 3 miles wide. And that's only the population in the immediate city, and that's practically the only city there.
Did you notice any change towards the end of 1941, just before the war began? Did you have any idea there was going to be a war, or did you think it was just more garrison duty?
You mean before the battle started in Hong Kong? Or?
Yeah, just before the battle.
Well, I think we had, I don't think we had too much inkling, actually. We thought probably be a war, or thought probably, you know, in the long run there might be fine. I don't think anybody, it's just my own thoughts, but I don't think anybody really took it seriously until it actually happened. You know, maybe the officers had some advance information we didn't have, but they weren't letting it out. When it did, when the bombing did start, it actually started as far as bombing, as far as we're concerned. Well, I could be wrong, but it was a Sunday. I think it was a Sunday they evacuated us from the mainland, Kowloon, that is, they called the mainland, to the island. And they took us all over in these ferry boats. There's a lot of these big ferry boats there. Just like we normally travel, you know, when you wanted to go across the island, which we didn't get a chance to very much. And they took us to, now don't ask me where they took us first, because I couldn't tell you. I couldn't lay a finger on actually where they took us. I don't think there was anybody outside of officers, or maybe a sergeant or something like that, that had been on the island too much, like as far as exploring the place before we went across.
So the first auction you saw them was in Kowloon when the plane was bombed Kowloon?
Well, we didn't actually have any actual fighting there. Not the company that I was with. I think there was a few of them when they called Territories, I think.
What company were you with?
Well, at that time I was with headquarters. I originally started with Sea Company in Jamaica. I didn't see any actual fighting then. I never had any actual fighting until Sunday. I guess it was a Monday after that, and then, they weren't really on the island. They were forced in here and there amongst the hills.
How many men were you with during the fighting? Were you just a few of you, or was there a whole company?
Well, we started. I don't know if they all started the same way, but we started in a platoon. At the start, we got into some quite heavy fighting. I don't know if that was on Mount Nicholson or where it was. I wouldn't be too sure about that. We fought a hamburger. But anyway, we got separated there, and after that, it was for 2 or 3 days, it was just hither and yon. When you found somebody, you went with them. I finally got with about 5 other guys on Bennett's Hill there, which probably doesn't mean I'm the youth. The principal, Nicholson and Bennett and the principal area, where actual combat fighting was done. But we were on Bennett for a couple of days before we got a hold, and I can't remember where, but we got a hold of a 3-inch trench mortar, and we took this up on the side of the hill there and used that for a while. Anyway, we got some orders through to go to where the Navy had their headquarters there. But you probably heard from some of the rest of them that the Navy scuttled all their boats that they had there in the island, and they scuttled all the cruisers and light craft that they had, and came on the island with the rest of the army personnel.
Do you remember what date this was approximately when all this took place?
Oh, well, that's pretty hard to hear. That's all between the 7th and the 25th. The surrender was on the 25th.
Mm-hmm.
But I know on the 23rd, we'd worked at, I think that place is called Britain or Little Britain or somewhere, where the Navy had their headquarters.
Little
Hong Kong? Yeah, it's on the island. It's on the opposite side from the city. But there was one incident. There was a pillbox. I remember this very clearly. The day before, I think that was the 23rd. There was a pillbox at the bottom of the hill, the base of the hill there. And there was about 10 or 12 within there at one time. It's one of the small damn things, maybe 10 to 12.
Mm-hmm.
Probably heard the boys talking. They had them all around the island at one time. Anyway, I know that I had left there with these other two fellows to go along this road to this naval headquarters. I think some word had been sent, if I remember right, to everybody, that more or less based in probably the area there in that area. But anyway, it was probably the best move in my life, because evidently the Japanese that same afternoon surrounded this place, and there a couple of windows there, and they just tossed hand grenades in there. I think there were 7 in there, with the exception of 1. They were all burnt to death. Some were terrible. They needed a way to get away from these things. I think the only man, if I remember right, was by the name of Thomason. That was originally with the Sea Company, and he lived quite a while after he got in prison camp. He did die. Actually, I don't think he died from that, but he was terribly burned something off. And he'd been wrapped in 4 or 5 blankets underneath the bench in this place, and they threw these.
What type of equipment did you have during the battle? Did you have lots of ammunition and equipment to fight with?
Well, no, not really. We had lots of rifle ammunition and Lee Enfield. And we got a hold of some old Lewis machine guns. I think probably came from the British. I don't know. We didn't know too much about them. They work really good when they're working. Now, how are we getting ahead of the story? Or?
No, not really. We're still in the battle here.
Anyway, getting up to just about Christmas Day there at this week. I think we did guard duty there. They had a kind of a, what do you call it, an upstairs veranda on this building, the Navy's, I think that isn't the word for it, the piazza or something. Anyway, we used to do guard duty up there, you know, keep, take turns in there. But the word come on Christmas morning that they wanted us to go up. This is the other slope of Bennett Hill behind this building, and see if we can get contact for the enemy there. And I always remember this hill because not only did I get shot there, but there was a huge rock on the top of this Bennett Hill. Oh, you know, something like maybe the size of this, twice the size of this house there, and we come up behind this rock. And this is about, I guess it was 2:30, 3 o'clock in the afternoon when I got shot. Anyway, there was one of the fellows with the machine gun. He was to open fire, and we were to go out around the other side of the rock because the Japanese were coming up the other side to, once he stopped firing, we were to throw his hand in there. We never did get that far. I guess I got out too far from the rock or something. Somebody winged me once. And I was taken to the hospital right away, but I didn't even know the surrender, and the place of surrender to me was over there in Victoria Hospital.
So you were in the hospital the day they surrendered, Bennett?
Yeah, and that was the day I was shot on Christmas Day. I think they surrendered around 5 o'clock in the afternoon, so it'd be two and a half hours. I was shot before the actual surrender.
Just before you surrendered, did you have any ideas about the Japanese, what they would do if you surrendered, or had you heard any stories about what they might do? Or?
Oh, yeah, we heard all kinds of rumors how they wouldn't let any of us live. They'd been into us all to death and so on. I never could understand where all this stuff comes from, but of course, word of mouth, you know. And I was in that hospital till I knew about the surrender. I was in the hospital. I had the lead taken on my shoulder there in the hospital. And heard all the stories. I think a Japanese, some kind of an officer, I don't know if it's a commander or general, what the deal. He comes through the hospital anyway. He told us we wouldn't be harmed if we did as we were told. It was only a few days. I think it was about the 8th or 9th of December, and they chased us all out of the hospital anyway to this internment camp they had at North Point. A place called North Point, where we were all prisoners of the world in. And it didn't matter whether you were wounded or not, or healed or not, we were all put out so they could get their own wounded in there.
So nobody was killed or beaten up in the hospital when you were there?
No. Well, I don't remember anybody getting mistreated there.
So then they took you to North Point. Do you remember how long you stayed at North Point altogether?
I couldn't actually tell you. No, I don't know what. I could be wrong on that because we went. We went back. I know we spent some time in Shamshipo. That was the original camp on the mainland where we had our barracks.
Mm-hmm.
Junior. But I think the last place. No, it is for a while. I think we went to Shamshipo first. They took us across to Shamshipo and we were there for maybe a month or so, and they brought us back to North Point, if I remember right. Mm-hmm. And we were there for quite a while. I think in we worked on the. Enlarging the airport for them there. You know, when we were able to.
Mm-hmm. So you were on work parties in
Oh yeah, I've done a week party. That's quite a job. Actually, what we were digging, most of the work was taking down this hill, actually, leveling out this hill. Fortunately, it was mostly sand.
Did you have many tools, or how did you level it?
Oh, no, we were doing it, actually, how they had kind of a little railroad there, you know, tracks with the little carts on. We used to load these carts and take them down and spread them out, you know, spread the dirt out. There's nothing but bull work there, as near as I do, and a lot of hollering and jabbering.
Was there much sickness, do you remember, while you were in North?
Oh, there was quite a lot of sickness there. Once dysentery started, you know, it just seemed to be everybody's. In fact, it went from dysentery to diphtheria. And there was a terrible lot of diphtheria there. You know, friends, I know it seemed to work that fast. I was lucky there because we had to go a long time without the serum, you know. And I got that the day the serum came in, so I was probably one of the first ones to get a shot that to save my life. And I remember I was sick for quite a long time when I come out, and I was tagged as a carrier, so I was more or less isolated again. And besides this, the beriberi and the lager had got a real good hold of that time. Actually, I think the beriberi had got a hold before that because we had sore feet for a long time. I think that was what the first symptom was.
So you were in the hospital then quite a while, or isolated with the diphtheria then?
Yeah, it was quite a time with that. And then, and I don't remember the exact date they sent the first bunch from there to Japan. I know I went on the second bunch that went to Japan. And now I'm just guessing, I see in the April, May, and there's another long, tough trip, about 21 days from Hong Kong to where we went to in Japan, to Niigata.
And back in North Point, how were you fed? Were you fed very well
near there? Well, it was mostly rice.
Mm-hmm.
Rice and water.
And what about the guards, like, did they treat you quite cruel, or do you remember?
Well, they were tough enough. I mean, you didn't shape up to what they thought. They battered you around quite a bit. At that time, everybody was out of the cigarettes and cracked everybody. And, you know, they had made some connections with the Chinese, and they were smuggling in this. One end of the camp, I don't know if you've heard these stories or not, but they were trading watches and cigarette lighters and logs, whatever they could, with these Chinese, and made sort of more defense, and they pretend to the Chinaman would throw the cigarettes back in, and see that's how we were getting any smokes we got. Mm-hmm. We had one issue, 7 cigarettes, I remember right, for each man there at the Japanese body. And they were so damn strong that you'd just take a puff and your head would start going round. You know, you'd have to sit down.
Mm-hmm. How about Red Cross packages? Did you receive any of those?
No, the first Red Cross package that we got, I think, was in the other camp in Sham Shapoa. And if I remember right, it was divided 5-5 to one Red Cross block. Red Cross block to five people. And these came from England. They were very, actually, I thought, you know, for what we got out, they were really good. You know, the best of everything there. But after all, to buy one box between 5 or 6, whatever it was, didn't go that far.
Mm-hmm. What was the medical treatment like? Was there any at all?
There was very little. We didn't have much to work with, really.
Remember what doctor looked after you while you were sick?
Well, we had our own doctor there, Dr. Crawford. Mm-hmm. And I had this Dr. Ashton Rose. He was very good. He didn't have too much to work with either, but he did everything he could for us after that. Now there was another doctor, but I don't remember what his name was. But they took him away somewhere. I don't know whether they took him to Japan or where they took him.
Was
Doctor
Rose a Canadian doctor too?
No, he's not. He was. I think he was born of a English Indian parents, from India.
He wasn't a grenadier then?
Oh, no. He was a doctor that was in the colony at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I think probably he was with the British, with the British version. His engineers, I forget the name of the British version. I think probably it was with one of them. I don't think I ever really did know. What are we up to now, up to time?
Yeah, we'll move on to Japan then. Do you remember what year it was that you moved to Japan?
It was in 42.
42, yeah.
Exactly. I'd say May on a rough guess.
Mm-hmm. And you went to which camp in Japan, do you remember?
We went to a camp in Niigata, just outside of the city of Niigata. We worked on the docks, loading and unloading boats.
Oh, yeah.
And believe me, this covers a multitude of things. A lot of rice and soybeans, soybean byproducts what's called bean curd and some kind of cake meal made out of soybeans. Magnesite ore. This is a tough job, too. Just dump this stuff in the dock, and we used to shovel it in little carts and haul it over to the box cars and onto a tin there, and then somebody else shoveled it up into the box cars. Now, we had different times. Sometimes we had crude rubber that they'd taken from someplace like Nala or something like this, brought it in a great huge box, and we unloaded that cart. One time we had a whole shipload of potatoes, potatoes. And it's pretty hard. We had fish to unload. We had pretty nearly. We had rope. We had one time we had aluminum bars to load. Pretty nearly everything you can think of.
Did you manage to steal any of this food while you were?
We did our best. Lots of times we got caught and got walloped for it. I remember particularly one time they brought in 3 or 4 cars of Japanese oranges, and we had to unload them and take them way back in this warehouse. It was quite a time there. There was a couple of guys working in the car, and one fellow standing watching, and somebody else swiping oranges. And got knocked down quite a few times for that.
How was the food in the camp? Did it get any better than it was in Hong Kong, or was it about the same?
Well, it's about the same thing. They brought in a lot of seaweed, and we ate that. When I say seaweed, it covers quite a variety of seaweed, too. Some was like chewing a rubber band, this type of stuff, flat stuff, and some like our parsley, this type of seaweed. And we had boiled potato tops. Potato tops, it's sweet face, yams. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever seen the vines around, they're just more or less like a Virginia creeper type of thing. This is right, this is what they look like, although they grow under the ground the same as our potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And a little bit of fish heads mostly. Sometimes you get an odd good piece of fish, but not too often.
What type of quarters did you have in Japan?
Well, they had big long huts for us, and just like a barn with no loft over there at the side. It was straight up all the way up, but the side at the top, a place on each side like a built-in veranda. It's got the lower zone. I'm trying to get the picture to you. Just like a shelf on each side of space in between, such down either down below or climb the ladder up on the top.
How many men would be in one of these huts?
That's a pretty good question too. We had 4 huts for about 300 men. You know, they were quite long, and they had sliding shutters on them, and the doors were sliding doors back in front. I was in. I don't think you didn't interview Calvin, did you?
Not myself personally.
Anyway, this probably think this has no bearing, but his nephew was with me in this camp. He got killed in that camp in Christmas Day when the roof collapsed under the weight of the snow. I was in the same building, and I was in the top floor, probably saved my life, because the building came down around us, you know. But we were just caught in a little square, not much bigger than we were in now. Two of us. And they were up on the roof, and they cut the roof open and let us out. We didn't actually get hurt. We wound up with all the wires, electric wires around our neck. They did have some electricity. That's where this Freddie called me. That's where we get one of the beams down hit him in the head. Simple as that. That's where this Freddie called me. That's where we get one of the beams down hit him in the head. Simple as that.
And what were the guards like in Japan? Were they the same as Hong Kong?
Yeah, pretty well. They were pretty rough on us at the dock there. There was no no fooling around, you know. I mean, no time was all work, and that was it. They give you, maybe a 5-minute break every time you were back and work.
Was it all Canadians in your camp, or were there any other?
It was mostly Canadians. We had, I forget, we had a few Mexican boys that had been captured on Wake Island, I believe it was. They weren't even participants in the war. They were mostly engineers. They were building an airport there for American Army.
How about disease? Was there as much disease and sickness in Japan as there was in
America? No, there was some, but there wasn't as much. There was still a bit of a beriberi and pellagra there, but not too much. They were good at one thing. They had the hot baths. When we come from work, we went to a hot bath. And you know, really hot. This helped us some, but they didn't have too many medical supplies there either. I know, because I had pneumonia twice while I was in Japan, and I had a pretty rough time with most time.
How about the bugs? Was there many fleas or lice in around, do you remember?
No, there wasn't too much of that in Japan at all. The bugs were bad in Hong Kong, but that wasn't the fault of the Japanese. Blame for lots of it. Couldn't blame for that.
Did you have any idea when the war was coming to an end? Did you know?
I mean, it was always rumors for a long time. We actually didn't know. I think the first time we had inkling, maybe. We were working on the dock there one day. We were looking for a little men. But there was no air raid warning or nothing. All of a sudden, I think it was seven American planes coming in. They strafed the docks there for about 15, 20 minutes. And the Japanese had foxholes, and they were all in there. And we were sitting out in the open, so when actually we all died for the warehouse and got inside there. And it was, you know, pretty uncomfortable for a while because it ricocheted all over the place. I don't think anybody actually got hit that time. And then I think probably a month or a month and a half before the end of the war, these B-29s started coming over at night. This is when we really got a rough idea that things must be getting pretty close. And anyway, they were dropping mines along the Japanese coast there.
So you had an idea that the tide of the war was changing?
Yeah, well, this is where we got the picture pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the day that it happened, we got word. I guess we didn't actually know, but in the morning, all the Japanese were gone except a few sentries who were standing there, and I think. deputy sergeant there come. Someone told us that they surrendered. Yeah. They had surrendered.
And when was the first contact that you had with
the enemy? Well, then the planes come from some carrier. They're American planes. And the first thing they did, the first time they come over, they dropped a wrench, a monkey wrench with this note attached to it, saying that we were, told us the war was over, saying we were very fortunate because Niigata was the third scheduled place for the atomic bomb, which we hadn't known about before. And then, of course, they dropped in, for a few days, they dropped in clothing and canned stuff and that, cigarettes and all that, of course.
How long was it after the note that said the war was over until the Americans came in and you saw them?
No, Americans, only a few Americans came in and told us. We didn't have any transportation. We had to wait there for probably a week before we got out, before they could get a train in there and take us to Tokyo, then to Yokohama.
So then they took you on a train to Tokyo, and what did you do in Tokyo? How long were you
there? We weren't there very long. We boarded this boat, and we went from Yokohama to Island of Guam, and I think we had a medical there. Mm-hmm. We were there, I would say, 2 to 3 days. 3 days, I think, to Guam, and then we went from Guam to Hawaii. We weren't there too long later. I think we came in one day and went out the next. Incidentally, there's three guys there that got lost. They had to fly them eventually back, accidentally on purpose, I guess. And we went by ship from there to San Francisco. They took us out to some American base on an island there overnight. And we were quite amazed at how modernized things were. I guess that was the sense. And we came back to San Francisco and we took the train down the west coast, right to Seattle. And we went from Seattle across to Vancouver Island on one of these Canadian Pacific ferry boats.
How did the Americans treat you all this time from the time you left home?
Americans, you mean from the time you left loose?
From the
time we first met them in Guam, they treated us real good. Couldn't have been better.
Very good to you,
very good. Everywhere we went.
When did you first hear from the Canadian government? Was this when you got to Vancouver, or was it before this?
There was a representative of the Canadian government that, I can't remember the name of that island. I think it's there in San Francisco Bay. I think they gave us a little money, $50 or something, maybe to give someone out of the money they got us to do until we got to Victoria. But actually, we didn't need money. Everywhere we went or shopped, the Americans were there with goodies of some kind of cigarettes, even beer. We stopped the train a couple of times up the west coast and I always remember that. There was a long line of guys going to this brewery, and they all come back with a case of beer over the shoulder back to the train, and the porters had it all set up with tails ice with the beer bottles in them.
Back when you were in prison camp, do you remember any humorous things or anything funny that happened while you were in the camp, or what did you do for amusement?
Well, we put on a concert every once in a while. I think we put on a spelling match or two. Otherwise, I guess there was a few amusing things, although it was pretty hard to see the point of humor. I do remember one time I don't know if you've interviewed him yet or not, this Tommy Forsyth. He also was in Sea Jumbo. He was always a kind of a half-religious guy. Never seemed to be any different. One time when we were working the dock there, this Japanese officer stopped and started to cuff him around a little bit, and we all wondered what was going on. Tommy, what the little Tommy was doing, you know. We dug into his pocket and he had a little can here of this instant coffee come in. Here, Tommy had two eggs in there. He'd swiped some God knows where. They had some hens around there somewhere. Anyway, Tommy got caught with these two eggs.
Well,
I guess there was lots of incidents like that, but I just don't remember.
Do you remember any escape attempts while you were on any of the camps?
Yeah, at North Point. You had a big storm sewer, and it emptied. It was just below the seawall, emptied into the sea, and these fellows took off on it. I never even knew what was going on until the next day when they landed it all up. And I think there were five of them that took off to this sewer. And I never learned until, actually, I never learned until the war was over what happened. Actually, they got caught, and I guess they were shot near the river.
When you got back to Winnipeg, how were you treated when you got back into Canada or Winnipeg?
Oh, we were treated very well from the time we contacted the Americans until we got right back home, and we were treated very good.
And how long was it before you were discharged once you got back home? Well,
I was practically on leave all the time. You know, we'd report back to barracks and go home when I was at the site in Fort Osborne. But I was discharged on the 1st of March 1946.
And did your 3.5 years in prison, has it bothered you in any way since that, or?
Oh yeah, I've had quite a bit of trouble with one thing and another.
So you suffered some physical disability then from being camping?
Yeah, I don't think anybody in particularly me that ever got over the effects of this very, very implied reaction. But we still have guys coming in. I work in Deer Lodge Hospital, and you know, they all come through there at one time or another. Everybody that's in this part of the country, it's even me. You see the same folks come in time after time after time. I think a lot of eye trouble, a lot of teeth, trouble with their teeth and everything like that, you know. And it's getting now, there has been some before, we're getting now, I think there's a lot of arthritis developing as we get older, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of folks getting bothered with that.
Do you think the Canadian government's treated you fairly since 1945?
Oh, I would say they've treated us pretty good. For a long time we wondered, but I think once we got the thing rolling, they treated us pretty good. First we thought they were pretty, you know, pretty callous. It wasn't too much increase in pension, but in fact our own Hong Kong group, you know, they kept working on right from the beginning, so we finally got the legislation to really help us a lot.
Mm-hmm. So you're satisfied then with your pension regular?
Well, nobody's ever satisfied with a pension. Mm-hmm. Well, everybody likes to. But I think our association has really done good to get the pension up where it is.
Mm-hmm.
There's nobody, I don't know if there's anybody actually getting less than 50% now, but they're very rare if there is.
Mm-hmm.
And if they are, it's probably their own fault because they, you know, they never bothered to go after it.
Mm-hmm. And so you're still presently employed then today, are you?
Oh yes, I work for the government office.
Yeah. And just as a final question, what are your thoughts on war?
Oh, that would be, I don't pay too much. I don't really see much sense to it. War, but I don't think there's much remedy for it. I think there's always going to be some.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't allow myself to dwell on this. You know, I don't get rabid or anything about it, but I don't see too much point in it.
And one final one, how do you feel about the Japanese people now? Do you hold any grudge against them? Or?
Well, let's put it this way, I own a Japanese car. Does that answer the question?
Yeah. So you have no grudge or anything?
No, not now. I was rather bitter at first, but I don't have a pointless.